Good morning. We'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's study session for the May City Council for Thursday, November 8th, 2012. I would like to excuse Councilmember Glover, who will not be joining us this morning. And the first item on the agenda is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the Central Mesa Light Rail Stations. Ms. Sorrell.
Good morning,
Ms. Sorrell.
My name is Jody Sorrell, and I'm the Interim Transit Services Director at the City. I have with me today MB Finnerty, who's the Public Arts Administrator for the Metro Light Rail, and Rob Antoniak, who is our Outreach Coordinator for the Central Mesa Light Rail Extension. This morning, we just kind of want to give you a quick update on where things stand with the station architecture, design, and the public art process. So quickly, and we've all seen this map a lot of times. We know the high-capacity corridors and what the regional system will look like, and then the boundaries of the Central Mesa Extension. And then now MB will talk about the art.
Good morning. The last time we came to you, we showed you the art and architecture in their conceptual phases. We were really showing kind of the themes for each of the stations and where they were going, and now we're going to show you kind of the progression of that. So at Alma School Road and Main Street, one of the things you'll notice is that in addition to our white sail canopies, Mesa also has these colored canopies, slightly different design, which are going to add a little contrast and kind of some a little excitement to your alignment. The Alma School Road station is very tall. The idea here was the emergence, that this is an area that is going to grow with technology and different businesses coming in. And here you can see the artist worked with the architects. In this case, he put his artwork into the screens along the way. These are actually, these trees are fractal patterns. He was looking into the history of the Stringtown and the Farming Association, as well as the technology that's going to be coming. And you can see this warm palette in the canopies. And here in the center, in the largest part, these colored, these are actually colored glass, and you can't see it very well, but he will have images stamped into the glass, as well as this centerpiece, which actually will be a dynamic piece. It's actually going to kind of rotate and move with the wind. And then as we get to Country Club
what
Drive.
What rotates and moves with the wind?
the center mandala, just that, the little. The metal circle in the center. It's all like a wheel. It'll turn this way.
Okay.
Depending on the wind, but very slowly. No.
Well, I was just trying to figure out how it's spun. It spins this way.
No.
It'll spin this way. It'll rotate in the.
Well, yeah. Either one's rotating. Does it rotate? Does it rotate 6 to 12 or 9 to 3?
6 to 12.
Okay, gotcha.
All right.
That's what it is. That way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, vertical axis.
God, I hope that makes the.
Well, if it's a vertical axis, then it would be.
It's like a clock.
Six,
yeah, it's not going to. It'll stay on the same plane it is. Yeah, it'll stay on the same plane.
Like a clock face. Oh, so it's turning like.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Please go to the next slide.
Okay, so at Country Club Drive.
Oh, like God. A fan. Okay, like a fan.
At Country Club Drive, the theme was this: the idea of the threshold. You're now entering.
Does anything spin at Country Club?
Nothing spins at Country Club.
Oh, okay.
No.
All right.
We could work on that if you'd like. All right. So this is the idea that you're entering into downtown, and what was requested here was something, a kind of a wow statement. And again, here you see that all the canopies are all.
It'd be more of a wow if something spun.
Go ahead. We could work on this if you like. So here,
here's.
All right. So here's the plan view. You'll notice that the elevation has been reduced. And again, this idea was to make a smaller profile as we get into downtown. The businesses want to be able to see across toward each other and make that more open. And here's a perspective. You can see the artwork. This will be lit up at night. In the daytime, it'll glow. It actually has dichroic glass, which means that as the sunlight hits one side, you'll get a color. And as it goes through, you'll both get the shadow, which is a different color, and a reflection, which is another color. So it's going to be a very, very colorful, powerful piece here. And again here, the low profile. Now, as we get to Center Street in Main, we're going to, the color of the canopies changes. Now we're using blue, and the artwork, unfortunately, is still being developed. We're kind of moving a little more slowly on this artwork. It's obviously a very important intersection in the town. But you can see the profile of the stations gets, again, smaller. And the artwork here and the theme of the station was really about the convergence of the city government, the arts center, and then all the commercial, the merchants and businesses in the downtown. So this is really about things coming together and the profiles around there. And then at the Mesa Drive Center, the theme here was really about the beautiful park areas that you have in this neighborhood. You've got Pioneer Park, you've got the Temple grounds, and the idea was to bring in that sense of the park into the station to make it really the greenest station. And the artist took that idea also, and she decided to use the idea of the park and the backyard and an area where you might, you know, have storytelling, grandmothers telling their stories to their grandchildren, and just this idea of passing history and stories from one generation down. So you can see these large screens that she has. These are all going to be cut metal, and she has figures of a woman and a child with a book telling these stories, and then on the other side there's a man and a child, again, telling stories. Down lower, where the seats are, she has these cut metal, again, with these beautiful floral motifs, and she is actually going to be collecting stories from the community, and she will make glass watercolor paintings on these book forms in the inside. And as you walk into this station, and then also at the center, you'll see this pergola, the idea of kind of, a garden setting that you walk into. And I'd like you to notice that, you know, the OCS poles are going to be green. The OCS are the overhead catenary system and the lighting system that's along this alignment. Just in the downtown, they're green, which matches.
Let me ask you something. Yeah. Has there been a decision on the lights? Are they going to, because it looks like, and I know this was for, it's been up until now just for display purposes, the light standards that match basically what we have now. Has that been decided yet now, or is that still in discussion? That has been decided.
They'll be green, and they'll be similar to what we have down there to match that aesthetic.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
Because I know that's where I thought we were headed. I just before it had never been decided. It was we're just using that for illustrative purposes only.
The downtown between Country Club and
Hobson
will have the same type of color that you see in the lighting stand. The colors on the light standards will be similar to everything you see downtown today.
Yeah, and the design. The actual light design.
Right. As a matter of fact, I think they have them still staying in the center, right?
Yeah.
Correct.
With the lights in there, all that. So it'll look very similar to what you see today.
Yeah. Okay.
And then outside of that, it'll go back to what was the cop? What was the color?
It's a Mesa bronze.
Bronze. Sorry, it was a bronze.
Oh, Mesa bronze.
Well, it's your bronze. It's the bronze you're using. So I'm calling it Mesa bronze.
Because if we were putting Tempe bronze in here, I think we'd have a problem with that. So I have no idea what the difference is.
What if it's spun?
I don't know. I don't care as long as it's Mesa bronze. I'm fine.
I think it's not bronze. It's
third place.
Aluminum, the standard. We don't have brown lights.
Call it Mesa gold if you like.
Okay, we'll call it whatever we want.
So, and again, the canopies here are all are orange.
Are we getting too deep for you?
I mean, no.
You know, this council has a tendency to really go really philosophically deep on issues like this. Go ahead.
You might have noticed that at the intersections, everywhere downtown, we are using a terracotta brick stamped asphalt in the crosswalk area. At Center Street, we're going to do something a little bit different just to set off Center Street. We're still working on the design here, so I'm just showing you a few samples of what might happen, but essentially we'll be having some kind of stamped asphalt in the crosswalk with a pattern or a painted design that we are still in the process of working through. So we'll bring that out at our meeting.
Yeah, Councilmember Higgins.
A question. You know, we use that rubberized asphalt pop, and so kind of stained stuff. Is there a problem if we had a lighter color where, you know, you're going to get that blacktop smooshed?
Right, and so, matter of fact, we actually met with Metro, and we've asked them to go to kind of a darker color. And we've used it in the projects in the alleyways that we recently did when we did the utility work, and then we had to go back and put the asphalt, and we did some of that stamped pattern with a color on it. But we went a darker pattern because you're right, those tire marked, whatever, the rubber kind of starts marking up. But we think if we go with a darker color, we want to create some kind of contrast to the black. Mm-hmm. And so I think we've selected some colors that will be darker and maybe absorb some of that black better.
And can he clean that off? I just don't know. Where's Dan? Where's Dan when he needs it? Does that come off easily, or is it just something, just out of curiosity, can you power wash that off?
Mayor, Councilwoman Higgins, that stuff does power wash off. It's actually, there's a product that goes on top of the stamped asphalt. It's an epoxy that in every 7 to 10 years, you'd be probably reapplying that product on top of the asphalt. Mr. Brady said, we did it in the back of those alleys and had some good success with it. And it's easy to repair. We can take the pattern and match that pattern and apply crack seal material or something and restamp it and put a new epoxy on it. It looks a lot easier to repair than brick pavers.
So,
I'm sorry,
I was going to say, so it doesn't really matter the color because you can clean it off fairly easy?
It cleans pretty good. Even with the rain, the raining, things like that. The concern you have is when we go out and do a fog seal or some other product, we do a treatment on the asphalt. I'm pretty sure this is a rubber asphalt we're going to be putting down on that surface, so we won't be doing too many treatments on that right off the bat. Probably wait 5 years before we did any treatments on it in the first place. And the products we're using are sticking better to the asphalt now.
Okay, great. Thanks.
So do we have plans to use stamped asphalt in here? And is that the primary or the bricks?
No, stamped asphalt. We prefer to do it.
I was just anecdotal. I did some stamped asphalt when they first started doing it in a subdivision, a couple subdivisions like 10, 12 years ago, and I drove through those literally 2 weeks ago. I was amazed how well it had held up. I mean, the one thing when we first did it, and this was in lieu of, it was in a sort of a roundabout or a cul-de-sac where you had 3-4 streets coming together, so it's gotten a lot of traffic. It was stamped, it was red, and it was, one of the big things is, will that develop traffic patterns? Will it? And I was amazed after 10 years it was still holding true.
The key component is getting a good surface asphalt on top and structurally sound so it doesn't rut and shove, and that's what you see out there. And we're finding better products that work out there in the field. And Scottsdale uses it, I've been very happy with the product. That it holds up well.
And it looks nice. Yeah. I mean, and some of these things, until you get right up to it, you cannot tell the difference.
It's all between quieter. You don't even really know you drive over it versus a brick pavers. You always hear it thunk, thunk, thunk as you drive over the brick pavers, but these are smoother as you go over top of it.
Great. Okay.
So that's pretty much my presentation. We will be showing this at the November 14th public meeting to get some public input as well.
Great. Any questions on this? Okay. Go ahead.
Real quick, anytime we're in front of you, Mayor and Council, we want to make sure you're up to date on the latest schedule, and this is the schedule that we've presented to the public in the past. We are under construction. If you've driven Main Street, you've seen some utility construction out on the west end of the project in front of EVIT, and out on the east end of the project over by Mesa Drive and Main Street, as well as between Extension and Country Club right now at date. So utility construction is active and underway. We're out notifying the public. They get door-to-door visits from us, usually several days or even a couple of weeks or a few weeks in advance of that construction that's occurring in front of their businesses and in front of their residents. And there's coordination going on with the multiple stakeholders that travel the corridor. This is the schedule that the public will see when they see us next week during the public meeting. Speaking of the public meeting that we have, related to what you've seen here this morning, our next steps are to be at EVIT, the Health Sciences Building, at 6 o'clock with a presentation at 6:15 on November 14th. Next week, and then to revisit again with the public in the first quarter of calendar year 2013 with that design update. The Center Street Station art, as MB alluded to, is evolving, and we'll come back out to the public, as well as our traction power substations and signal houses and the architecture and landscaping treatments that go along with that, and then an update on the park and ride. So those are some of the things that are evolving during the design build process. That we want to make sure that we include the public, include your stakeholders and our stakeholders in that process. We'll be back out to visit with them then. So with that, I think we've got questions.
Okay. Any questions on this part? Hey, thank you. Looks pretty exciting. Thanks. Okay. The next item is hear a presentation, discuss, provide direction on the proposed alley gating program.
Alligating.
After a while, crocodile.
See you later, alligator.
See you what? See you later, alligating. See you later, alligating.
morning, Mayor and Council. I'm Kim Falbeck. I'm the Real Estate Services Administrator for the city. And here with me is Lenny Hume from Transportation and Cynthia Garza from Neighborhood Outreach. And today we're here to give you a presentation on the Alligating Program and the Community and Cultural Development Committee recommendation.
Hey, Kim, you want to move, I think, one of those. Or there's one right over by Cynthia. You can, yeah, either one there. Thank you.
Thanks. We're here to seek Council's direction on to pursue this new program for gating public alleys. And we did go before the Community and Cultural Development Committee, and some of their recommendation and goals were to retain the ability to reduce our alley dumping in alleys and trespass and other crimes that are occurring, as well as simplify the process for the neighborhood, in which it encourages the participation in this program. And it also preserves a long-term ability for the city to make changes if unanticipated problems arise. Just a little bit of background on our alleys. There's approximately 96 miles of alleys. Alleys were originally dedicated for the installation of our utilities between homes, as well as for our solid waste pickup. In 2002, our solid waste moved our trash pickup to curbside, and therefore what's remaining in our alleys is our utilities, as well as access to rear properties. Such utilities that may exist in our alleys are sewer, power, underground power, overhead, telephone, and cable, and some alleys do have irrigation. Some of the
Okay, Councilmember Higgins.
Like irrigation, like flood irrigation or
yes.
irrigation?
Yes, really? There's some standpipes in some of the older western.
Oh, they don't flood there, but the standpipes are in the alleys.
No, the standpipes are in the alleys.
Got it. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. The purpose of gating an alley, it helps reduce our illegal dumping, reduces our crime and pedestrian traffic. Our existing process to gate a public alley requires the abandonment of the right-of-way, and which that conveys the property back to the property owners. And sometimes this is a laborious process. Our current process requires 100% in concurrence with this, and that is difficult to achieve. There's a lot of foreclosed property, bank-owned properties, and some property owners are just not for it. It also requires us to come to council to get approval, and if the land is conveyed back to property owners, sometimes their property taxes increase because they have increased square footages in their lots. Also, if the alley is abandoned, it restricts Mesa to participate in helping neighborhoods, such as if somebody moves their fence and they can't access and get through the alley, it's difficult for us to help them with that. Recently, we have received an updated legal opinion from our city attorney's office, which agrees that we can gate a public alley without having to formally abandon it back to the property owners. In 2012, you directed 5 public alleys for Mesa Drive and Southern Project to allow the alley to be public right-of-way and to install gates based on this new legal opinion. Our proposal is to gate these alleys by request, and our transportation department will install the gates, and our neighborhood outreach will coordinate that process between the neighborhoods and provide them information in the locks.
Define by request. By who? Who's
going
to request?
The neighbors. The neighborhood that are having problems with.
Is it a majority of neighbors? Is it one neighbor can implement this and then staff decides?
Mayor, council member, usually what happens is the neighbors start talking amongst themselves about the problems that they have. So there'll be one person that takes the lead that calls us and starts asking about the alley abandonment program, the process, and then we go through the whole spiel with them, and usually they'll get back with their neighbors. And most of the time, they'll tell us that they have a majority of their neighbors who are in agreement with closing the alley.
Okay, but do we require a majority? Do we have a standard protocol that says there has to be a majority of the neighbors who requested? Oh, okay. That's what I was wondering. What's your thought process?
Today,
Today we require 100%.
No, I know what we do today. I mean, I guess what I should have asked is, what are you, is it, if I've jumped ahead in the proposal, I'm sorry, I just want to know what
with,
you mean
with
by
this
request.
New proposal, usually there'll have to be a really good reason. It'll pretty much have to divide the whole neighborhood, saying, 40 or 50% are opposed to it for
right.
this reason. But usually it's one person because they don't want to get out of their vehicle to unlock the
okay, well, what we're saying is we haven't decided on the form on the
right.
formal
thing. Right.
Okay,
wait and see how it works, and then it'll make a little bit more sense. Because you don't necessarily have to have a threshold because access is still preserved, but they're secure at the same time. So that's
it's almost as if
well, I think there needs to be some side of if we're leaving it purely subjective, if you have a really, let's say you have 20 houses along this neighborhood. If you have two people that are really vocal, and let's say, could they convince us to gate, do we need 11 of those?
Get through the rest of this, and then we can talk through that.
Okay, that's fine. Okay. That's fine. Okay.
We would install no trespassing signs on these gates. We have met with the city prosecutor and the legal counsel in our police department, and they have informed us that if somebody is illegally back there, not unauthorized to be back there or committing a crime, that they would be able to cite them for no trespassing. Regular chain link gates are recommended because of their cost and durability, and they are low maintenance. We are looking at green coating being considered. Just a breakdown of the cost between the different types of gates. Two chain link gates with the locks and keys is $2,250. With the PVC green coating for two gates and locks, it will be $2,650. And then the wrought iron gates for two gates and the locks and keys is $3,200. Public right-of-way no longer. This process would require no deeding back to the homeowners. Therefore, fence lines would not be moved back. We would never have to worry about that. And our access for utilities and to the properties would be retained. This new process removes the laborious petition informal process. There are many neighborhoods that are never able to achieve the 100%, therefore their alleys have not been abandoned. And so this new process would help them, relieve them from the legal dumping, the things that are happening in their alleys. It also maintains us to enforce our code compliance. We've met with them, and it maintains our ability to enforce the maintenance and upkeep of that alley right of way through code enforcement. And it also helps us with the enforcement of no trespass. Because today, if somebody's back there in a public right-of-way, this clearly defines this area, no trespassing. Our existing alley gating budget is $20,000 annually. This will be able to purchase approximately 7 to 9 gates, or do 7 to 9 alleys per year. The green chain link coating would, for that, and then 10 to 15 for the regular chain link. So we would be able to do more if it was regular chain link. The priority would be to alleys that are brought forward to us by residents' complaints. Neighborhood Services currently has 47 alleys on their waiting list for alley gating. So we're here, Council, to get your feedback and your concurrence with this new approach. If we get your direction and you're in agreement, this would become our primary tool to gate our public alleys. Therefore, the existing abandonment process would no longer be needed to do this, but it would still remain available for unique circumstances that would be determined by the Real Estate Department. Any questions?
Turn over to Councilman Richens, who is the chair of that committee.
Okay. I don't know if Channel 11 can get on. There's a map back over here that has the alleys that they identify all the alleys in the city, and they also identify some trouble alleys. There's 47 that have been nominated by different neighbors, got on the list. So there's been some vetting going on so far. There's been neighbor, I'm assuming most of the alleys that are on the list have gone through some kind of neighborhood process and discussion, whether because there's a crime issue there or there's a desire on the neighbors. The hard part about this was you had a high bar, a high standard. You had to get 100% concurrence from all the neighbors. Sometimes you run into out-of-state property owners that you can't get that last person or the last couple of people. You have utility access that needs to be maintained. I live on an alley with these exact issues. The overhead power lines that are back there, the Cox lines are back there, Quest line or CenturyLink lines are back there. I got to get that straight for those guys. We set this bar that is difficult to achieve. How many alleys have we closed in 50 years? A dozen or two?
With gate abandoned?
Yeah.
Oh, we've done since 1953 abandoned. About 167 alleys.
167 mm-hmm. alleys. In since when?
1953 is our first record of an alley.
And we have 93 miles of alleys that I've
seen. 96 miles.
We have a lot of miles of alleys, so we have a long way to go and those processes. So we wanted to find something that would preserve access without having to go through all the legal requirements of abandonment of the property and deeding it back, and then to get through the controversies of moving their fences. And we've had problems when people move their fences. So we came up with this kind of this alley access change concept that could provide for gates, allow full access by any of the neighbors, and then as the city, it's still basically city property, and so by putting no trespass signs, you don't have to extinguish the public easement, but it creates a semi-private space where if somebody is trespassing through there, you have legal recourse to have them not. We have people that walk through our alleys all the time, and they know that there's a public easement there. And there's crime that occurs because of that access. And so we're trying to foreclose on those, or at least make it more difficult to do those things. So the discussion today is, do you want a threshold of neighbors to sign into that? How much should that threshold be? And if we do go forward with this, you know, is this the appropriate budget over a period of time to be able to do this?
I also want to add that when the resident calls us, we will be notifying the homeowner and all the tenants that live there via door hanger. They'll have the opportunity to call us and let us know if they are for the alley abandonment. We'll also encourage them to get together with their neighbors to do a meeting. We will explain to them at the meeting their process and get to hear those that oppose it, which is usually very little, one or two people. Once we explain to them, they don't lose their alley. Their alley's still there. They often confused abandoning the alley with losing their alley. And once you explain that, later on in the future, if there's some problem that comes up, whether somebody feels they're landlocked because they can't get their trailer out, then we can decide then just to simply remove the gates if it causes a problem or hardship to that particular neighborhood.
Yeah, I'm interested in that. Why would just having the gate there create hardship?
It shouldn't. It shouldn't. Really, what we're doing is securing the alleyways to the property owners that have access to it. We're not abandoning anymore, so. And every
maybe we better abandon the term abandon.
Yeah, it's
I think that because we're really not abandoning the alley. What we're doing is we're restricting access.
Right.
And I think that if we use a different terminology, it will go over very different because we're maintaining the alleyway as is. We're just not allowing the general public to go through the alley.
Right.
We're only allowing those people who have a direct interest in that alley, meaning the residents, the utilities, and the city. Have access. So really it's more of a restricted access rather than abandonment.
Correct.
Because before the abandonment related to a specific abandonment of the property. So I would suggest that we get rid of that word.
Mayor, just to clarify that a little bit, the reason it kind of gets a little bit of an issue is if we gate off one alley and leave another alley open, there's sometimes, because the alleys are not just straight shots, there's also ones that have T intersections, and they're really difficult to get around. So we just got to be smart about how we approach placing these gates.
But legally, we are not abandoning any right of the
alleys. And that's why I say
we're not abandoning.
Please get rid of that word. But the other hand is that if we're restricting access to an alley, I'm assuming we're restricting access only at the two ends or the three ends.
Correct.
We're not restricting access mid-alley.
No.
I know that's created a problem that Alex has had to, and Dave have had to deal with, where we actually did that, where we had the Y in the road, and we actually abandoned it, and it created real problems because you had a gate mid alley, and that I think that's what one of the cases that brought this to a head, because it did create huge issues. So I think Councilmember Fenter had a comment.
Well, for me, this is a no-brainer. I mean, I hope we at least double or triple that budget to be able to get those done. I give you the example of Sherwood Neighborhood, which is at Lazona, Maine, and what they had is a spectacular string of burglaries that ended with a police pursuit through the alleys, and they were able to catch the bad guys. But that neighborhood woke up. They took it upon themselves, went through the abandonment process. Crime is down in that area. It's a gorgeous little neighborhood. And so it makes perfect sense to do this aggressively. I think it's going to save us money in the long run when you talk about our most expensive services that we provide through public safety, and that's through the police department and others. This just makes complete sense, and I'm excited and happy to see that we've thought outside the box and through Dave's committee gotten this done. So complete support. I think we ought to give it more money and really go after this. So.
Let me ask you something. If we restrict access to alleys, who's the major beneficiary? Is it the residents? Is it the city? Or is it a combination? And the reason why I'm asking this is because I think if we really have a vested interest, and as long as the residents continue to have access, then can't we have more flexibility in deciding without going through this laborious process of stating a number of neighbors? I mean, everyone still has access.
Right.
Well, we had even talked at one point of just coming up with a program and just unilateral, and we could do that. I think we've got, what did you say, 47 requests out there?
47, and I
which
had...
Which represents, obviously, they're not at 100%, but there's a significant...
Well, that's where I think that the terminology makes a big difference, because you start talking abandonment and people get all excited. If we're just restricting access, but we're providing access through keys and whatever, yes, it might be an inconvenience to somebody, but nobody's had their rights or their access removed. So I don't know why we can't be more proactive as a city and being very flexible.
Well, I mean, it's always been the custom of the city to engage neighbors.
Oh, I get you. I'm not saying we...
That's basically...
Yeah, I'm not saying that we eliminate that. I agree with you. We need to engage and ask and not just... But I mean, rather than figuring out counting property owners or whatever, I was just thinking that if we have a vested interest in this, after the engagement, after the request, and there may be times when we want to do it. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
There may be alleys that we're the ones that are, maybe the police department comes in and say, listen, look at that map. We have a crime problem. I can see us being the ones that the city being the one that actually makes the request. And as long as we're only restricting access and not actually getting rid of the alley, which we're not. And the other thing about restricted access is I can see a problem if we make people think that we've walked away from it, that all of a sudden people start moving fences on their own. And then they're sort of like squatting on our alleyway. And I think it needs to be very clear that, no, this alleyway still exists. It's just that we now have a gate in front of it that you can use. But hopefully the bad guys, people who want to do harm, aren't going to use. Councilman Kavanaugh.
I just wanted to weigh in. I support the committee's recommendations. I think having the restricted or limited access alleys is, I guess, what I would call it. But it does serve a public safety purpose and a city purpose in terms of costs of the illegal dumping, the cleanup, and everything else. But I think it creates an enhancement to the neighborhood. You know, if you're on that street, if you want to buy a house, one of the selling points, and yeah, we have limited access alleyways, which preserves your own access, but bad people aren't normally going to be behind your house in the alley. So
it's sort of like a gated community.
Like a gated, no, well, it's a similar concept. People have that sense of comfort, and I think it's an enhancement to a neighborhood at the same time benefiting the city.
Councilor Richens?
The big change that facilitated this, though, was SRP used to regularly have to drive through the alleys to meter read. So they'd pull up behind your house with a pair of binoculars, they'd read your meter from the back alley in their truck. Yeah, seriously.
Are we sure they were from SRP?
Most of the time. So, yeah, they're not stopping at my house looking through the window. But when they went to the smart meters, they don't need to read meters in there anymore. So they don't need monthly access. And the other utilities only access
as
their
needed
equipment when there's a problem. And so that really changed. SRP was able to logistically do this a lot easier. So
now all of our solid waste doesn't go down alleys anymore unless there's no other access. They all pick up on the front now, right? That's what I thought.
The other thing to consider here is, you know, there's a waiting list of 47 neighborhoods now. If a neighborhood or a group of homes wanted to jump that queue, they could pay for the gates themselves. So instead of waiting for the city process that pays for the gate, they can go through the notification process, and neighbors could come together, pool their money together, and put their gates up sooner than later. One of the things we need to figure out with that is the procurement process. Are we going to would that neighborhood buy the gates through the city, or could they go commission their own gates? What if they wanted to go get some custom wrought iron gates or something? I mean, so we're trying to work through that procurement issue to make sure that, you know, we do things fairly, especially if, but I'm thinking if there's no city money involved, they should be able to choose.
I like the idea of them being able to upgrade and do that, as long as we aren't taking on a maintenance issue, that because I'm assuming we'd be responsible for the ongoing maintenance of these gates, right?
That's correct, Mayor. We'll be the city's responsible for the maintenance, and as we spoke in the committee, is that we would like to be able, the city would like to be able to see what the property owners would like to put in, neighborhoods would like to put in, so that we could build something that we can, if we maintain it, we maintain. I fear that we could get some ones that have wood slats in it and various other things that we just can't maintain. So we wanted to be able.
Well, the cost is right, is not something we want to undertake.
Well, yeah, and the design requirements can play a big part in that, because one of the most important things is view. You need to be able to. It needs to be
see
through it. Right. If you put wood slats in it, you can't see into that alley. An officer,
that sort of defeats the purpose.
Yeah,
if we block
can't
it off.
Pull up the alley, turn on that spotlight at night, and see down that alley. And so that's one of the things that's important for us to preserve in this program. But if one of the slides had the proposal where it had different costs, you know, where the basic gates were $2,250, but wrought iron gates were more, that increased cost would be borne by the neighborhood. So if a neighborhood, you know, we'll have some design standards to choose from, and I think the city can pay for a base cost of any gate. And if the neighbors want to upgrade, they're welcome to pool their money together and put up something nicer and add that money to the pool to be able to afford that. So,
okay. Vice Mayor.
And if for some reason that gate were to come into disrepair 10 years down the line, we would replace it with our standard gate unless
right.
they
the same,
came back through. I like that idea. I think it's a great idea.
I think it's good for, you know, went back and forth a lot with having the neighbors bear some cost to the gates, because it, you know, when you have a vested interest in something, or if you put your money towards it, you take a lot better care of it. But we ended up hitting on this, you know, let's cover a base cost for it and then go from there. We have 47 on the list to pilot this project with. There's going to be kinks along the way, I think. You know, I think after the first 10 or 12, we'll be able to get it figured out.
Okay. I agree with Councilmember Fenter that you know, if we're going to do this, I think we'd be as aggressive as we can, because I think we do have. I think the city has a vested interest. That's why I asked that, because this is not just a neighborhood and a neighbor request. I think we do have a vested interest from a crime prevention and from an aesthetics. It seems like when you do have the gated off or restricted access alley, that just things start going better. And it is a minor inconvenience, but I think the benefits far outweigh the costs. So do we have support moving forward based on what the committee has? As long as you don't use the word abandonment anymore.
I would love not to use that word.
Abandon.
I don't get, you know, restricted access, whatever you want to do.
Access change or?
Yeah, we've been saying LELE access change.
LELE access change. Oh, God.
No, we're not.
And when we get to the size of the program, then let's address that when we do the budget this spring.
Yeah.
About how much money we can really get into that program.
We're at 20,000. Let's go get those 47, and let's try to do as much as we can before the end of the year, and then we can tell you, maybe we can come back and let you know what that number is. But I agree. You know, the 20,000 kind of came up from an estimate like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, about how much we were spending cleaning up the alleys. But I think the council has made some great points about, beyond that, there's a public safety component. And so I think we should go back to the 47 today. I mean, we're not talking about a tremendous amount of dollars and to see who's available.
Well, and the benefits we get, I think it'll more than pay for itself.
Well, where's the money coming from now? What's the fund?
Transit Street Fund?
It comes out, yeah. Streets,
so the trade-off is we pave less, a couple streets less.
Yeah, it's the same pot of money as everything else that gets down, streetlights, whatever needs to repair. But I think what Mr. Bray is saying is we'll go out and see what the estimates are, get some cost, we'll bundle it together. We'll also have savings because we do have a contract to do alley cleaning or illegal dumps. It's over $150,000 worth of contracted services. So as we see a decrease, there's a trade-off on those types of things, so we can shift that money back over.
Yeah, we'll let me ask you this. If there's like grass growing in alleys and that, is that something we normally take care of, or do we expect the neighbor? We expect the homeowners.
The property owners. And actually, to that's one of the points that maybe some of the property owners may not be too interested in this is, that will be their responsibility much further now because the gates are there. So when there is an issue of that,
we're going to ask them to.
Yeah, you gonna, still have all. Yeah.
Because even though there's not ownership, there is
responsibility.
The responsibility because that's adjacent to their property.
That'll be part of the education process. They'll understand city code, and they're still responsible to maintain their portion of the alley. Well,
regardless of what city code
them.
Is, that's just a natural. Yeah. Natural
code
part
compliance
of
will still be able
ownership.
To go through as well.
It gives us something to do on Make a Difference Day.
There you go.
So our neighborhood went
we
through
don't
all
want to run
of
our
alleys,
projects.
Cleaned all of our alleys on Make a Difference Day, and it just, worked great. So.
And Mayor, it's very difficult for us to maintain it because, as we talked about.
Oh, no, I know. I'm making the point that we don't go around and mow grass and alleys
through there, a blade through there. We ripped out every cable company that has anything in it because they're only about that deep. So we try to stay out of them as much as we can.
Yeah, no, that's the point I was trying to make. So
we should probably just spray.
So, Mayor and Council, we'll go. Let's go back to the 47 for sure. Start with those and start working with those. See who's ready to go, and we'll have a better sense. We may spend a little bit more than $20,000 even now this year, and then we can come back in the budget, kind of get a sense of what's out there for the next year, and maybe adjust the budget again for the next fiscal year. So
okay, great. Yes, Vice Mayor.
Mayor, I don't want us walking away completely from doing anything in the alleys to keep them clear, even just driving through every once in a while with a general herbicide to kill off any plants. I mean, those things get out of control, then you have potential for alley fires and some other hazards.
But we don't do that now, do we?
No, we don't. Marin, that's actually, again, it's part of the code. It's part of the property owner's responsibility to maintain the alleys.
Yeah, we might have to look at that.
Well, those of us that live on it, we accept that role. I mean, it's not. You know, we don't expect the government to
if it's being maintained, that's great. And that's great if everybody's taking responsibility. But whenever we say,
right on the edge or a little further back, you see a pile of pond.
Yeah, most of them are pretty compacted as far as, you know, having gravel and sand back in there. And so there's not, it's not like wall to wall weeds, and it's generally there's no structures real close to it anyway. But
Mesa is doing a better job than Phoenix is, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, we are. And one of the other things I'm seeing now, the trend is alley gardens. So if you live on a house that's on the north side of an alley and you have a good amount of sun that hits that, they'll take a 2 or 3 feet off the fence and put in their
garden.
Growing gardens back.
Yeah,
there.
I don't want to
so
grow gardens.
That's really cool. Okay. So, and they're growing legal substances too.
I'm just legal? Well, it's becoming increasingly legal anyway.
No,
all right, I just from my firsthand experience.
How is it that you know the difference?
I went through the Nancy Reagan's DARE program in the 80s.
Gotcha.
Good answer.
As a kid.
Yeah, I'm just working off my experience and firsthand, and it's challenging in Phoenix. So if it's doing
you're talking about fires. I thought you were talking about firsthand experience with that.
No, that's I'm his sorry. Firsthand experience.
Okay. Thank you.
Great, thank you.
That was funny, though.
I thought your first-hand experience involved baggies, not... Item 3, hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the general plan update. Mr. Wesley.
Mayor and Council, let me get this up here. Okay, good morning. Here to continue our discussion with you of our efforts to update the city's general plan. Here a month or so ago, talking about our citizen participation plan. We've been working a little bit since then. First slide, just to remind folks what we're doing here. We're required to update the general plan every 10 years. We're working towards having this on the ballot 2 years from now, November 2014. Working primarily on an update of the current plan as opposed to just a real rewrite. Of the whole thing, and we're working with transportation and transit and parks on their updates also. said the last time we were here, we were talking about our citizen involvement plan. We've been doing several things since then, various articles in the newspaper, various newsletters going out that to let people know about our plan update. We have our plan advisory committee that we're working with. Again, that committee is made up of representatives of several of the city advisory boards, planning and zoning board, design review board, transportation board, and so forth. And we're meeting with them as we are going through a review of the current plan and letting them know some of the things that we're getting from our citizen advisory boards. We have our website that we've been using. This is mymesa.org. And gives people a good overview of what we're doing with regard to all of our different plan updates. We have the This Is My Mesa user voice website linked with the iMesa. Again, a similar opportunity to iMesa for people to give us those longer range ideas of what they'd like to see in the community and to comment on those things. And when we were here before, we talked about an app that we were developing. It's live and available now. It's an app that you can download to your phone. So if you're any place in the world and see something that you really think is exciting, interesting, that you'd like to see us include in Mesa, include in our plan, you can send us that picture, and we can make that available on our website. Been to a lot of different events over the last couple of months, letting people know about our general plan and getting some input through that process. We have several coming up. That we're still going out to through this first stage of getting people to give us some of their thoughts and ideas about the community and what they want to see it be 30 years from now. We've been distributing flyers at these events so that people have a quick overview of what we're doing and little business cards so they know who to contact. And again, getting a variety of ways that people can give us comments. Another one of those ways they can provide us comments is through a survey. Got a copy of the full survey there at your place, and gives them an opportunity to take some of these concepts and ideas that we've been talking about through a variety of ways and let us know what the community's attitude is towards them. So we've been going through this process. We working towards an update of the general plan. We've been looking for some guidance on what kind of those key community features and needs are that we need to look for as we update. What are we judging and comparing this update to? And so we've drafted what we're calling community vision statements for us to use as we're looking at the general plan and where we think we want to go. And we've created these vision statements based on the council's strategic initiatives, based on the input the public's been giving through the iMesa program, the responses we've been getting at the community events thus far with the surveys and comment boards that people are giving us, and things that we've talked about as we've gone through the sub-area plan. There's been some common themes that have come out of those. And so we want to review these draft vision statements with the council this morning. We know you've just had a short time to look at them. They're still in draft form. We talked about these at our PAC meeting yesterday. We tweaked them a little bit then as we continue to get comments from there. And so we'll come back to council again in the future to get your comments as you've had a chance to look at these a little bit more. But as you do, if you have ideas for us on any tweaks, we would like to have those. But we'll just go through each of these briefly. First one talks about creating village centers and neighborhood centers to our neighborhoods around the community as in appropriate locations. Not every place will be appropriate for these, but to give some identity and synergy to neighborhoods and help build a stronger sense of neighborhood around the community. Downtown being our primary urban core area, we want to emphasize that and continue to do those things that will make our downtown our primary urban core in Mesa. We envision other kind of urban type of areas of developing over time, whether it be in the Fiesta area, Superstition area down on the GM property that DMB is talking about. But we really want to make sure downtown stays that primary urban core. Working with existing neighborhoods, make sure that they are maintained and looking for those appropriate places for refill and redevelopment. Working to try to shift that dynamic of auto travel everywhere and respond better to our desert climate. Economic growth, we know, is an important feature of the current plan. It's also going to be an important feature of the new plan as we work to develop our economy, and including job creation, the workforce, the education piece that the council is working on currently. Mesa be a place where the environment, that built environment, is second to none, that we continue to work on that quality of the appearance of our city and the materials that go into the development. Continue to look at those quality of life issues and make sure we're maintaining those in a high-quality way. The arts, culture, recreation opportunities, you know, that's been key components coming out of the iMesa discussion. Transportation, we need to provide that variety of ways for people to get around, walking, biking, vehicles,
transit issues, whether you're going next door or across the world someplace. We're getting better at being able to provide all those ways, and we want to keep developing those methods of travel throughout the community. We want to help people to take pride in their neighborhoods and have safe, health, clean living environments for our residents. And that sense of ownership in the community we think is important. This is one that the PAC talked a little bit about yesterday. We want to add the word residents feel a sense of inclusion and ownership in their community. So we'll probably be adding that word into this particular statement. So again, today, if you have any thoughts or comments about these statements or want to get with staff outside of this to provide us any thoughts, these are draft. We know we'll probably keep tweaking these wordings a little bit. We might find a few concepts that aren't in here yet. We want to start using them. We get these posted on our website so the community can start seeing them and responding to them and use them as we're talking about our update process. So any comments at this point on these items?
You know, John, I'd like to go back to one thing where we talked about infill and redevelopment. I think one of the big challenges we're going to have here in Mesa going forward is our general plans in the past have focused on planning for areas for which there is no development. We're fast running out of those areas, and in the next 40 years, we won't have any of those areas. And a lot of the development will take place, well, it already is happening, but most of the development will be redevelopment. And as I remember how we went through our zoning effort, and some of the things we really got creative on was how to provide flexibility in redevelopment, whether we call it infill or I guess most everything is almost infill now since the city is well on the way to being totally built out. But I look like areas like the Fiesta District. And, for example, on the north side of Southern, where we have all these big box, we've talked about creating flexibility. But right now, my guess is the general plan calls for a certain level of commercial there. And if somebody wanted to come in and redo that, they'd have to come in for a general plan amendment. Is that correct?
That's the truth, yes.
I think that as we go through this, what I'd like to see is the same approach that we did with the zoning, where from a general plan standpoint, and I know general plan is not a zoning document, it's much more broad, but on the other hand, we encouraged flexibility and creativity and ease at a multiple use with the form base where you can evolve from one use to another use over the years. And yet, if you look at that, that potentially brings in to play conflicts with general plan. So I think that as we look at a redevelopment, that somehow we need to come up with some sort of mechanism or wording or coding in our general plan that allows that kind of natural progression, just like our zoning code is encouraging. Does that make sense?
Yes, Mayor, it does. And one of the concerns we have with our current general plan is that the land use map has been too specific. It is too close to a zoning map.
Yeah.
And so I think the next thing we'll be back to council with is some ideas on how we can raise the bar on that a little bit, make the categories more general, talk more about the character that we're looking for in various areas of the city.
Exactly.
And so that will give us a greater deal of flexibility.
And we have some great examples now, whether it be our downtown area where we're moving to much more of a flexible, looking at the nature of downtown and the multiple uses you have downtown rather than identifying specific uses on one area. And this is an area where, with the downtown overlay, it provides a lot of flexibility, but our zoning is the one that's very restrictive.
Correct.
And it would be nice if both those, at least conceptually, were in sync. And I look at that north side of Southern and recognize that it would be great if we had those situations where we never had to come back in for a general plan amendment when you had development that was redevelopment that was natural and was evolutionary in the sense that it evolved from big box to more urban or something like that, that our framework allowed that kind of natural growth. Because I can tell you from a development standpoint, general plan amendments are one of the great inhibitors of quality development. And there's a reason why you shouldn't easily be able to make a general plan amendment. But on the other hand, I think that as we go into redevelopment mode, we want to identify up front what the potential uses are, define that so of a quality development that covers maybe two or three different types of uses can be achieved without having to go through the whole general plan amendment. And a lot of these are going to be major amendments, which means that you're only going to do it, you know,
right,
once, twice a year, subject to what our law is. So I'd really like to see that
Okay.
Go on. Okay.
We will work on that. Any other comments up front? Again,
any comments, questions?
We'll come back again with these as we refine them a little bit more and look for any comments that you have. So that was pretty much it through the presentation. Just the last little bit, we have the contact information, again, myself or Tom Ellsworth and my staff. And then a real quick overview of our process. We're in this basic letting the public know what we're doing stage next spring. We'll take this information that we've gathered. We'll start generating some ideas and be out to the public using the iMesa Village concept, going out to each area of the city, getting feedback on that. Then summer of 2013, we'll be drafting the plan. A year from now, we'll be looking then for comments on that draft plan and then finalize that. So in 2014, we're going through that review and approval process so we can be on the ballot in 2014. Thank you.
Great.
Any questions?
Thank you. Any questions? Thanks, John. Okay. All right, the next item is to approve appointments to boards and committees. We have two appointments to the Historic Preservation Board and Parks and Recreation Board, one each. Have a motion. Motion from Council Member. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I skipped over 1D. Thank you, Council Member Richens. I know it's early in the morning. No, Tammy wasn't having an hard time. She goes, yes. Yes, I get away from having to do that.
No, we need you to
yes,
hear this.
Yes, we need this.
You need this one.
Well, I don't. There's a difference between our needing to hear it and her wanting to tell us.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, let's do that. We have a motion from Councilmember Kavanaugh, second from Councilmember Richens. There she is. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is approved for item 1E. Now we'll go back to 1D. I am dyslexic in the agenda reading, so that's okay. Neighborhood Stabilization Program 3, Ms. Albright.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. We're coming before you today because we're requesting guidance on filing a substantial amendment with HUD concerning our Neighborhood Stabilization Program 3. Ray's going to go through a PowerPoint to explain where we are and why we're requesting this. But basically, the amendment would expand our area and allow us to purchase buildings with more than 4 units.
As you can see, our total award was $4 million. We have an obligation to expend $2 million by March, and we're running down to a very short time frame. We've run into a number of items that have caused some problems for us. One of them is there's a large decrease in the number of foreclosures out there.
Which is actually a good thing.
Yes. Right. Yes. It's dropped off.
It's a challenge for the program.
Thank you for noting. The city has taken an official position that it is good that we don't have as many foreclosures as we used to.
So bad news is good news?
Yeah.
For this program, it
good
actually
news
is good.
Yeah, we've seen a drastic drop in the last year. I have a slide here that will show that more. Also, there's more short sales going on. Banks are really working with the clients or the homeowners to actually keep them in their homes or do short sales.
And again, while this is great for our community, this particular program only allows us to purchase foreclosed properties.
Yes. One of the things they're doing also is the banks are doing a deed in lieu of foreclosure. So no short sales, no foreclosure. It's a deed in lieu of that helps the person when they're getting out of their home. They don't have a big ding on their credit.
So the program is defined by the method the bank takes ownership, not by the fact that they took ownership. So, for example, if they take it in deed in lieu, the bank still owns the property, but it's now outside of our program, right?
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Unless HUD.
Oh, okay. Explain how a bank can get ownership of a house.
Basically, in the deed in lieu of is the property owner agrees to sign over the deed to the bank, and therefore they don't have to go through the foreclosure process. And what it does is helps.
Okay, well, yeah, let's start what a normal. Normally, the bank files foreclosure papers, yes. They go through that, you go to the county court house, and it's a very legal process, and then the bank, it goes to a bidder, and if there's no bidders on the county courthouse, there are always bidders, but if the bank is the highest bidder, then the bank takes the property back. If somebody else bids more than the bank, then they buy the note from the bank and get the house. But it's a very formal, legalistic process.
And the short sale,
and the banks now, instead of doing that, which then, of course, hits the homeowner's credit and all that kind of thing, the bank does what are called deed in lieu of foreclosures, which is
basically the property owner agrees to sign over the deed to the bank, Therefore, they don't have to go through the foreclosure process much faster. Also gives the opportunity to the property owner not to take such a hit on his credit.
Now, in both cases, if the bank is the successful bidder at the foreclosure auction, they end up owning the property.
That's
and we can buy it.
Yes.
If they take ownership through the deed in lieu, we can't buy it. So yeah. The bank still owns the property in both cases, but under this program, we cannot buy it because it did not go through the foreclosure.
Currently, yes. Currently. We don't know what HUD will do after they hear about this. We're seeing more and more of these, so HUD may change their mind, come up with new policies, say
right now, that
currently we cannot purchase those.
Right, and that's why I said it doesn't matter whether the bank ends up in owning it.
Yeah.
It's how they got the ownership that defines what we can do.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
This is a slide you can see as a foreclosure rate, how it's dropped pretty drastically since we actually got the grant in March of 11. We went through a series of TA on an NSP program as well.
Technical assistance.
Technical assistance to make sure that what we were doing was the proper way of doing it. They saw some issues with some of the processes we had there. They wanted to get more information, document more, that type of thing. Currently, this is our NSP3 area. It's a very small area, as you can see under the guidelines first announced. We had to make a significant impact in a neighborhood. And in order to do that, we had to keep our areas very small. HUD, these are some of the areas you can see here.
This is our current NSP1 area.
Actually, this is current. This is NSP3. This is a map of NSP3. There's several census tracts.
This is the little one. Yeah.
This is the purple hatched area. There is another part of the NSP3. The red border there is the NSP1 current.
What's interesting about this diagram is it shows the impact with NSP1 that we made in the current NSP3 area. You can see the overlap, and you can see all of the homes that we had purchased and worked on in that area. So we've already spent a substantial amount of time in our current NSP3 area cleaning up a lot of the foreclosures.
Councilman Richens?
I know real estate investing, it's easy to get into a house, but hard to get out of it. So let's get a quick status report on NSP1. How many homes did you acquire? How many do we have sold? How many do we have left in our inventory?
We currently have 9 left in our inventory out of the 39 that we have acquired in rehab. We have a contract, and we have somebody actually looking at a house today, I think it is, to go view one of the houses, too. So
we also did 33. We also did 33 rental units with those funds?
Yeah.
Right, in the partnerships that we had forged. Mm-hmm. Okay, so 39 that we acquired. How many do we have in our inventory still that were?
Currently 9.
Pardon me?
9.
9.
Are those actively for sale, or is that?
Yes, they're actively for sale, and we've got
the projects are completed.
Yes.
Okay, so we don't have any other projects underway.
No, actually, I was looking at that too, because one of the things you can do is you can use NSP3 dollars to rehab properties we acquired under NSP1.
Doing acquisitions.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you,
Councilman Fender.
Good report.
Ray, I kindly ask, we shouldn't have 9 sitting there. With the market, it is. There are thousands of people trying to get homes in this area. Why are they sitting? Are they priced too high? Or
no, they're not priced too high. What we ran into, several of these things, was HOC had to close their doors. We lost our counseling. The buying hasn't picked up till recently. It wasn't toward May that we all of a sudden seen a large number of, a large number of applicants coming in through our doors wanting to buy. They came through our program, and we got a lot of buyers lined up and ready to, and we're getting a lot of phone calls now. Yeah. But it's gone through a series of this.
Okay, HOC, you used an acronym.
Housing Our Community.
And Ray, talk about, there's a certain, this isn't just anybody can walk in and purchase this home.
That's correct. Okay. I mean, there is income qualifications involved in this. They have to have the bank, been approved by a bank to get a loan, those types of things. A lot of these people have gone through these processes of cleaning up their credit. A lot of people have just opted to stay out of it for a while. Now they're seeing an increase in the market values, so people are now also getting scared.
It's an income-based qualification also, correct?
That's correct.
Well, the idea is to get people who would not be able to or would be very difficult, have a very difficult time purchasing a house through the open market thing.
Yes.
Right. I mean, we buy houses, we do improvements, And then we try to increase home ownership, and that's why it's income-based.
Yes.
We try to get people who may not be able to walk into the open market and be able to buy a house, we get them into home ownership. Is that accurate?
That and still shows the potential to be able to maintain
to
and
yeah.
hang on to the home.
Right.
So they still have to work with the banks and pass the bank's requirements
right.
to obtain a loan and things like that. So it's kind of a window that you're hitting in there.
So what makes you feel comfortable that it's not a pricing issue?
No one. Every time the bank, if they go through, you might say a sale of a property, what we look at is the bank does their appraisal. If the bank comes back and the appraisal's lower than what we have, we lower our price down. So we've set the prices based on appraisals. We're not looking to discount the houses really low. We don't want to do that because that drives the market, property values down.
Yeah.
We're not looking to do that. So it's not an issue of pricing. Lately, all the houses that we sold, the banks are coming in at appraised value or the value that we have set for the sale.
The other issue we've had is Housing Our Community was our counseling agency. With the closing of them, we've had to put an RFP out on the street. We are reviewing those bids now, and we hope to have a new counseling agency on board to be able to provide the required counseling to these homeowners before purchase. So we do have several kind of in the wings that we're working with, and we hope to start making some of those closures.
And Newtown has also stepped up here with some of their requirements as well, because before they wouldn't, several of the counseling agencies that people had gone to get counseling were not issuing certificates unless they had a contract with the municipality in which they were working in. And so I know Newtown now is not doing that. They're actually giving out the certificates to the home buyers if they've got their 8 hours education.
Well, as nicely as I can say this, something's wrong if we're sitting on stock right now because there's too much demand. I know I heard all the different pieces. We should have no inventory. That should all be out and going. And so I would hope we go along those lines, but thanks.
Councilman Higgins?
I just wonder, how many people have responded to that RFP? Are there, like, how many?
There's three.
They do have to be HUD-certified sure. counselors.
Right. I just wondered how many are.
Yeah.
Is that a big market? In the valley?
No.
So three's pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's what, you know, that's our challenge is you could have a lot of people interested in buying a home, but they have to go through these counseling and processes
yeah.
before they can even come with their certificate to even make an offer. So
okay.
that's our big challenge right
okay.
now.
Yeah. Great, thanks.
But we are looking at more ways to market these. So we're looking at all kinds of ideas to get it out there a little bit more.
This here is, we're on REO match. Basically, these are foreclosed properties that we have first look on. This is our current NSP area, which shows NSP 3, NSP 1. This is what I made this 2 days ago. This is the properties available. Essentially, there's none. We just recently just had one that popped up.
Mr. Pender?
With regard to HUD, I know, you know, HUD puts out through MCB a list, and it says first thing on there, first choice to cities, towns, locals, and then owner-occupied and those kind of are you working that list also?
Yeah, this is the Neighbor Community Stabilization Trust. This is actually through HUD. HUD has highly recommended this. This is one they've pushed very hard for all jurisdictions to use this because this is their first look yeah. program.
So we have HUD, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and those, and that's a compilation.
Yeah, Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, there's 40 banks involved in this REO match.
So I guess I'm confused. So what you're saying is because all there is a yellow blob with no dots in it, that means there's nothing there?
Nothing there, and it has popped up in the last 2 weeks. Other than we had one that was further out west. We're trying to keep from Gilbert Road west. We didn't want to go too far east from Gilbert Road. We did have one property out there, and we recently had one pop up yesterday, and we've always expressed interest in it.
The reason we're not looking any further east is just because we wanted to concentrate to the west. But if there's houses further east, wouldn't we want to look at those?
If it's in this area, we could. But the only one that did pop up on here was a fairly large home, swimming pools, all of the things that we typically don't really try to target.
Well, let me ask, and I know we've gone over this, so I apologize for repeating this. Our boundaries, those are self-imposed boundaries, or are those part of the approval?
Those are self-imposed boundaries, but they're also part of the approval.
And we'll show you a map of how we came up with those.
Well, and I know that. We've gone through that. What I want to get is we self-imposed those boundaries. So
we did.
We don't have the – once we included that in our HUD application, we don't have the ability to go out those boundaries, or do we?
Until
we file –
That's why we're here today.
Until we file an amendment.
Right. Yes.
Okay, so the answer is no. We don't have the ability to go outside those boundaries.
Right.
So you're going to ask us for the ability to go outside those boundaries.
Those areas.
That's – okay, thank you.
And the reason why we use the first look is because we're also required as part of this program to purchase the home at 1% under the appraised value. Once it hits the open market, we can't compete.
Yeah.
So it's not to say there aren't foreclosures out there. There just aren't any through the first look right now.
And there are many people who would debate that that's good that we can't compete.
No,
right.
Because the market's taking care of things.
Right. If we aren't able to spend all the funds, that may actually just be a sign that
the market's doing
it. Private capital out there. And that's, you know, this is a stabilization program, so we can sell our inventory and we don't have to buy another home. That's not really a bad thing.
Hey,
so
unique for government. We want this program to go out of business.
Yeah. But we're just,
and we actually give back the federal money back to them, right?
Right, right. Oh, we just don't draw it down.
Right.
I mean,
Right.
Okay.
We're looking to expand our area further from west, basically, from Gilbert Road. And it'll include multifamily housing. This is, like I said, this is our current.
Hey, Ray, excuse me. Hold on. Councilman Richards has a question.
I just had a comment. Why are the rules written to exclude fourplexes, which is the biggest problem?
They're not excluded fourplexes.
Why is this rule? Go back a slide.
Yeah.
Why does that say five or more units?
That was a self-imposed requirement when we started the program. So part of this amendment that we would be filing is to say we want to go beyond that. We want to look at the apartment complexes. We want to look at things that have more than four units. We self-imposed that at the beginning of this.
Can we acquire fourplexes now?
Yeah.
We have.
This is just five or more units.
This is saying...
We're going to go beyond that.
Even beyond that. We might find a 20-unit complex, and we would now be able, with the substantial amendment, would be able to pick that up.
If council remember, when we first had this discussion, there was a real strong emphasis.
Yeah, that's why when I saw the slide.
That was kind of evolved, and so we're coming to council to say, would you be willing to allow us to then open this up a little bit more, go to a greater area?
I think if I remember that discussion, we were encouraging you to go more because we thought one of the biggest problems was the small cluster apartments that were really bad, and we were not doing it. I remember Alex was the one that raised that. Remember that correctly, Alex?
Versus single family.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
We thought we could make actually a bigger impact
on
certain neighborhoods if we could clean up some of these small apartment complexes that have really seemed to drag down a whole neighborhood.
And the main reason we stayed away from the apartment complexes, they are much more labor intensive when it comes to the approval through SHPO. That's the other aspects of it. Sorry for the acronyms. It's State Historic Preservation Office.
What is it?
No, the State Historic Preservation Office is giving you grief over requiring a fourplex or a,
No. What it is we worked out a programmatic agreement with SHPO under the assumption that we wouldn't have to go through them for all the rehabs that we did. The limitations on that are 1 to 4 units or less. So anytime we go over units that are five or more, then it requires their approval, which is a 45-day process to do rehab.
Given our time frame, I would stay away from anything over that. Then, if you got to go through SHPO in 45 minutes, and you have
it's only for rehab, and that's what I'm going to stress is. But we can do acquisition, and it doesn't require that.
So there may be something that
we should leave that for the market to absorb. Then, shouldn't we? You know, we need to be getting the stuff that's the worst of the worst, not stuff that somebody in the open market would come and acquire that doesn't need a bunch of rehab.
Well, I think if we look down near, my mind went blank on Broadway. What's the park there?
Reed
Park. I think that what we saw when we bought multifamily and we rehabbed, it definitely elevated the entire area. So, getting a couple of units and really doing a nice job. I think our purpose is to elevate the
area.
That's
fine, but what he said was, if they have to buy a complex over five units that requires rehab,
right.
that they have to clear it through the State Historic Preservation Office, and it takes 45 days. That could be the death knell for mm-hmm. a program that you have to spend $2 million by March. I mean,
we can purchase without.
I can purchase.
So without. There, if.
I know, and that's my yeah. point is, I get it. I get okay. that you can purchase it, but
you can't
if,
start
if
work.
You're going to purchase right. a complex that doesn't need rehab, then what shouldn't we let the market acquire those
yes.
units?
We,
or are you
we
saying
pick up
that
the ones
you, can,
that need
you have to just purchase it before March and you can start rehab after
yes.
that?
Yes, we yes. can do that.
We just, so depending on how much we purchase before March, we're hoping to hit that number, and then we can deal with the rehab for the next phase.
So you can get some. You can still do junky stuff.
It we just yes. actually a year after.
Yes. Yeah.
Just start the rehab.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Thanks.
I think the real key here, Council, is we're looking for to get approval to expand the area, so we can go look for those.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think as we look at our success, it's been a great success with the single family, but you can even see more of a marked success when we bought those multifamily yes. units. I mean, the change in REIT has been yeah. pretty amazing, because what we want to get is the slumlord who now yeah. has the piece of junk property that he or she is unwilling to invest in, and right next to a piece of property that we have rehabbed, that now the market we've now set the market. And I think that's the purpose of this program, is that we become a market player, but in a good way, by elevating the market, which then encourages people to invest in their properties. And I think we can have more of an impact with these types of units, but they've got to be really ratty. And I agree with you on the historic preservation, because sometimes, as we've experienced, their idea of historic structures is
or streets
is a little, let's just say, interesting.
Right. You know, and I think the other market mechanism we can employ here is demolition. And I don't know how much demolition you can do in this program. I thought we talked about...
We can do demolition, but we have to rebuild. The main purpose of it is...
We have to rebuild in the same place?
Yeah.
How long can we land
short bank? Of land banking it.
How long can we land bank something?
Now, do we have to rebuild? I thought we could sell to someone who rebuilt.
We can land bank it, but I think it's 10 years as a land bank.
Yeah.
But under that, before you buy it, you have to have a plan in effect of what you're going to build there and how it's going to be
developed. Can we reduce the number of units?
I don't believe you can reduce it beyond a certain amount. I think it's like 20%.
Oh. We'll have to check and get on that.
We can look into it.
But we could buy, demo, have a plan, but then sell to a private party who would then build on that property.
That is a possibility, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Redevelop it.
Maybe... Just let's get to the direct, because we can bring all those scenarios back. I think right. the key is just we got to open up the areas, right?
Yeah.
So why don't you describe to council what areas you're proposing?
Currently, right now, this is the existing area. These show the delinquencies that are going on within this area. This is a map that I had requested from them, giving me an idea of what's on the horizon, essentially. And so this is what they put together for us. Now, that doesn't mean that... these are actually going to go into foreclosure. Like I said, where Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac recently agreed to do deeds in lieu of with a number of their properties that they're looking at foreclosing upon. And they don't have to go back to their insurance companies to get approval to do so. They're basically negotiated that with those insurance companies. I think there was like 20 or so insurance companies that agreed to this. So that's some of the things that they're doing to try to keep people in their homes.
And then once we file a substantial amendment to expand our area, this program will start to send us any foreclosures in that expanded area. So all we know of right now is the notice of defaults.
This is the area we're looking at. It's all in hatched, dark patched lines there. So we're expanding it significantly. As you can see, it's only in those colors other than green. Green is... the areas that did not get into the 17 or greater zone where HUD determined it as a need.
So those are areas we cannot expand into.
But what we're proposing, what we propose to council is to allow us to expand into the hatch areas.
That's
so
right.
You're looking at everything west of Gilbert Road that is 17 or above on the
yes.
score.
Yes.
Okay. That's everything in the city, west of...
Yeah, it looks like we just take the whole city boundaries going west.
Yes.
Everything that we could, yes.
Yeah, that's 17 or above.
I would say yes.
Okay. I mean, do you need a motion? You need a, what do you need?
Just kind of, we got a direction, Mayor, generally.
Head nodding kind of
question.
Stuff.
Yes, Councilmember Higgins.
And there's nothing further east that qualifies in these.
Yes.
There is further east, yes.
East.
There is further east. We kind of chose that just Gilbert Road, as this is an older neighborhood. We've got some feedback from council members regarding houses further east, that they are more newer houses. They're
More available. That. There's pockets of old Highland.
I mean, we can look at those. We can do that.
Well, wondered why, we never showed.
They got annexed in, I mean.
Yeah, first. Years. Right. So they're older stuff.
Councilor Richards.
Yeah, I think the part of the reason was, if you go back to our original premise, was to focus on 85204, mm-hmm. was to have a great impact in a small area. One of the problems, deficiencies of our housing rehab program over the years is that you're rehabbing houses across the entire city. You're doing 10 or 20 or 30 a year, and you're not having a huge impact on a city that has 200,000 homes in it. By concentrating in this area, you're hoping to have much more of a significant impact like we did in 85204, which is,
I guess it would be nice to see, the rest of the city, and are there any of these red, orange, yellow spots somewhere?
No,
like the whole map, and I don't remember. Oh, that doesn't go all the way over there.
Okay. I was just looking to see if we had any in here that we went past.
So maybe we can send that off, so we can just have a background.
We do have a copy of that.
Yeah.
We can send that.
So we move forward with this, and then you could bring up the
others
later.
Yeah, just to know where.
From what I'm hearing, is that we, and I remember that discussion very clearly that Councilman Richards had about why we focused on 85204, is we wanted to have an impact. We recognized there were other parts of the city that had issues, and that wasn't that we were excluding those as much as we wanted to have as much impact as we could. And so we chose at that time what was the highest concentration of issues. Here what we're saying is that the market has changed in a good way.
Yes.
And whether we had an impact, I hope we did, I think we did. But the market as a whole is changing, and so market forces have actually caused us to look outside of the original area. But we still want to maintain that focus, which is to be able to have some kind of impact on a concentrated area. It's just that we've expanded that area because we don't have any homes left in the original area. Is that?
Yeah, and I'm not as concerned as Councilmember Fincher about the absorption rate of our homes, and how quickly they sell. I'm more concerned that we're getting the worst of the worst, stuff the private sector doesn't want to touch. It's too complicated. It's too messy. It's positioned odd in the market. Stuff that we can really come in and have a huge impact.
Or that the private, let's face it, there are people who buy houses, don't put money into them, and they turn into slumlords.
Right.
We want to stop that, too.
Exactly.
So,
and we do.
And that's the worst of the worst.
And I know, Fentner, what you're talking about. And like I said, I've seen a huge increase in the number of applicants. And I anticipate our inventory will be down to zero here within the next, by March or more.
You're saying that, and to reiterate, you're saying that it's not a market issue as much as it is a process issue as far as
exactly
why we
a lot of people I've asked. I said, well, why are you buying now? And they say, well, we're seeing prices go up.
Well,
clean up our credit.
Once again, it gets back to the credit counseling and
better
the process
rates,
has to go through.
Yes.
Better interest rates, all these things are
all right.
Getting people out there and spurring them.
Okay, do we have a motion to approve the extension? Councilmember Richards, a second from Councilmember Fenter. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Here reports on meetings and conferences attended. Do I have any? Mr. Brady. Councilman Higgins.
But I do have someone shadowing me today, Mayor. And Sean Sloan, Executive Director of Sunshine Acres, and also in the Mesa Leadership Class, could find no one else. So he's following me around this morning. Just waving hi to Sean over there. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, Sean. Mr. Brady.
Mayor and Council, just to remind you that this Monday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. is the Veterans Day Parade in downtown Mesa. The parade starts at Center Street at 3rd Place and runs south to Center to 1st Avenue. The next study session will be Thursday, November 15th. And we'll see you then.
You missed one.
Oh, yes, sorry.
No, go ahead. Do you have something on your list?
Yes. The other thing we talked about, and I believe we're still looking towards a special council meeting on November 26th. We'll have it so we could call in on Monday. We'll just try to find a time when the council would be available to call into a conference call to canvass the election.
Okay.
Okay.
The thing I was going to point out was the RAF Cadet Memorial Service at the Mesa Cemetery on Sunday morning at 10:45. If you have never attended, it's a kind of special moment in history for Mesa where, is it 22 or 20? I think 22 Royal Air Force pilots who passed away during training during World War II at Falcon Field are actually buried in the Mesa Cemetery. So tons of people come out, and the World War II guys from England still come over for a couple weeks and honor their fallen brethren. But it's very cool. It's a really neat event, and it's that history in Mesa that we don't celebrate enough. So it's very fun. Very fun. Sounds weird. Fun. It is meaningful, and it's a very enjoyable event. So come on out.
It is really an experience. The Commemorative Air Force has stepped in the last couple, 3 years and really done a good job. Their flyover, very, very moving event. It's really nice. Very, very nice. So, okay. Thank you. Ms. Crocker, any requests to speak?
No requests, Mayor.
All right. Councilman Richens.
I think something happened on Tuesday that of significance for the city, and is something about a park bond or something that happened? I know we can't. Well, so far.
Unofficially. Wait. We can unofficially talk about it till the 26th.
Say how great it is.
No.
We need to thank our citizens for, for their trust and support.
But I've already done it on Twitter. Doesn't that count anymore?
Yes, it does.
Sure.
It does.
I mean, if I've said it on Twitter, it. No, you know, the citizens of Mesa have been incredible in what they're willing to do to support a community-wide effort to really build a great community. And that's what question one was. And to see the overwhelming support, ongoing support from our citizens to do something that was a little out of the box. But it was a citizen-driven process through iMesa. It had some bold initiatives, and that's what iMesa was all about, was creating transformative projects. And I don't know that people will fully appreciate how transformative some of these projects are until they actually get done. But when we're finished working with the school district, for example, on Mesa Junior, on Powell, I think it'll be a point of pride for our community that will have benefits literally for generations. And to see the citizenry step up and support that ideal and that vision and that commitment is really gratifying. So thanks to all the voters of Mesa who supported that. And we're just, you know, humbled in many ways because there were citizens that stuck their necks out on this one. And you know, the last... one or two bond, at least the last one parks initiative did not succeed in a much better economy. And so I really appreciate, and I think I speak for everyone in saying thank you to the Mesa citizens for this investment. Because, I mean, that's what this is. When we talk about it as a bond, but really what it is individual citizens and property owners agreeing to invest in their community. And that's the ultimate commitment that a citizen can make is with their pocketbook, and they agreed to do so. So we will now take this responsibility very seriously, like we have on other bond issues. And I think the one thing that we've really tried to do, and if there's something I'm really proud of that we've been able to accomplish over the last 4 years is the bond monies that we've been entrusted with, which we've been entrusted. I think this staff and this council has done a very good job of making sure that projects were built as promised. And we always say on time and under budget. And I think we have I'm proud of our track record of accomplishing that over the last 4.5 years. And I don't anticipate that there will be a change in that. We take that very seriously, and we want citizens to be able to experience the results and be able to say, this is my park, this is my road, this is my fire station, because it really is. And we've had a lot of ribbon cuttings and a lot of groundbreakings, and I think that we can I'll say that our community is much better off for the things that we've invested in than it was before. So thank you to everybody. Is that okay, Mr. Richens? All right.
Call the question.
We have a motion to adjourn from across the board, a second from across the board. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.